Welcome to the London Property Podcast, your go-to source for navigating the complex and ever-changing London real estate market. Our digital marketplace provides informative and educational content from industry leaders through podcasts and videos. We cover various aspects of the real estate experience, including buying and selling, finance, law, tax, construction, design, and more. Join us as we delve into the latest trends and developments in the market and gain valuable insights from our panel of experts.
Hello and welcome to London Property, the home of Super Prime. I'm your host, Farnaz Fazaipour, and today we're delighted to welcome back Catherine Simpson, who's a partner at Edwin Coe and specializes in leasehold reform. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So, Catherine, just to put our listeners on the same page as we are, let's talk about how the leasehold and freehold bill came about.
So it's a bit like trying to work out how the First World War started. And I think you can probably trace it back to around 2017 with the leasehold house scandal. A lot of developers had built large housing estates all over the country. So the likes of Taylor Wimpey, Barratt, Bellway, Persimmon, and people thought they were buying freehold. But actually what they were buying were 999-year leases. Okay, akin to a freehold, but they included very often doubling ground rents. So ground rents that doubled every 10 years. So you can imagine over the lifetime of the lease, 999 years, the rents were going to be pretty enormous. They also had provisions in them in many cases that meant that every time they wanted to do something like paint the front door or build a conservatory, they had to pay huge fees to these developers. And it was considered to be very unfair. It's caused people a huge amount of stress. The Competition and Markets Authority looked into it, and a lot of the developers have actually agreed to forgo those ground rents, some in exchange for RPI increases, but certainly not as onerous as they had experienced. So this then led the government to commissioning the Law Commission to recommend the reform of the leasehold system, basically to make enfranchisement easier and cheaper. Because a lot of the problems that these people had with their leasehold houses was, how do they get the freehold? Now, they were going to have to buy out those ground rents. Were they going to qualify? So it was seen, and it was also going to be very expensive. So the Law Commission then produced about 101 recommendations. So in two reports published in 2021, the first to make enfranchisement easier and the second to make it cheaper. Selling a leasehold house is a difficult concept. It's often difficult to mortgage them because if you've got a ground rent that outside London is £250 or more, then it's more easily forfeitable by a landlord. And the same thing in London, if the rent's over £1,000, which is obviously a much higher figure.
So that's why the tenants, leaseholders, decided that 999-year leases, let's try and just go for the freehold. And then you saw that you've got to actually buy out the ground rent for 999 years before you can get the freehold. So it becomes impossible, actually.
Was the trigger for a whole reform of the system. The Law Commission basically came up with 101 recommendations, and it was intended to be a root and branch reform. But that isn't actually what has happened. So after these reports came out in 2021, everybody was waiting with bated breath to see what the government would take away from them. And I think it was probably as early as 2022, noises were made by Gove about abolishing leasehold, reinvigorating common hold, abolishing leases of houses, very little of which actually made it into the bill. In fact, the abolition of leasehold houses is a very recent amendment to the latest draft of the bill, although apparently it says abolishing leasehold homes. So what does that mean? Flats,
right,
and houses.
Right. So it's more a vote winner than actually thinking it through.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that.
So now, what would you say? So what are the tenant lobbies saying about all of this? What are the hot topics right now that, you know, it's been going and it's been debated for 2 years?
Yes. So I watched some of the select committee, and I felt that it was quite heavily tenant biased. So you had a group of women from the Leasehold Knowledge Partnership, who I think at least one of them, possibly all of them, had come unstuck with the whole freehold leasehold house scandal. And so it's been termed fleecehold or fake freehold. And they were given quite a lot of airtime and felt there was a huge amount of sympathy. And there was also a call to abolish ground rent, which is subject to an ongoing government consultation. It doesn't yet appear in the bill. Quite how that will look, there are various options being considered, including capping it at 0.1% of freehold value. Tenants lobbyists are saying, let's abolish ground rent altogether. But effectively, you would be tearing up a contract. So there must be enormous human rights issues for those freeholders who will be deprived of their legitimate ground rent income. And if you read the evidence on the House of Commons website, which I was showing you, there's an awful lot from pension funds, charities who rely on these ground rent income streams. And in my experience, actually, ground rent isn't the issue when it's just sort of £100 a year. So it seems bizarre to abolish it, particularly if you're going to be basically tearing up a contract. How does that work?
Well, it sounds to me like there's two sides to this ground rent. There's the ground rent that's been there since the Act was introduced in 93 and has always been swallowed up and part of the situation. And then there is the abuse by the developers of ground rent. So it should be really a two-tier solution.
Which is why I think the ongoing investigation by the CMA is a good thing. And I think more and more house builders will come out of the woodwork over that, because reputationally it's disastrous for them to be seen to be fleecing people in this way. So that's welcome. But tearing up leases and saying, right, ground rent's over, there must be human rights issues. Now, because this didn't form part of the initial recommendations by the Law Commission, it wasn't actually considered in human rights terms. What was considered were the other aspects of the valuation. And the Law Commission got a opinion from a QC, obviously now a KC, Catherine Callahan, who wrote about the human rights issues arising out of the changes to the valuation methodology which were being recommended. But she wasn't actually addressing the ground rent scrapping, because that at that point wasn't really on the table.
Right.
And I think she would probably say, and I know that people have been seeking some advice from Human Rights Council, that there is quite a case for an effective challenge, which obviously could only be mounted once the law's been enacted.
And so leading on from this, what are the landlord groups, how are they responding to the reform?
Well, in terms of things like scrapping ground rent, there is an uproar.
Yeah.
And obviously the valuation side, which I think you've got Justin Bennett talking about soon. I mean, there are some aspects of the reform that are not controversial. The ground rent scrapping is. You have tenants groups saying, well, you know, what are we getting in return for our ground rent? No, the clue's in the word rent. You are renting the land that your property sits on from your freeholder. And I'm slightly weary of the whole rhetoric about feudalism and because I think that fires people up in the wrong way. And there's got to be a fair balance. People do accept generally within the market that there needs to be a reform of the leasehold system. It's not completely broken. Yes, it's open for abuse, but like any complex system, you're going to have abuses and things that don't work quite well. A lot of the Act is devoted to looking at service charges to keep costs down so tenants can litigate against unreasonable service charges. And that's all pretty uncontentious and seems pretty fair. But there are aspects of the enfranchisement valuation which are giving cause for concern. The basic amendments to the qualifying criteria are generally not considered to be controversial. So, for example, you're going to get a 990-year lease, not just 90 years, and zero ground rent, so you buy out the ground rent. It's 990 years, not 999.
I was going to say, there was a logic to that I've forgotten.
The reason is that as now, at the 90-year point, in the five-year run-up, a landlord is entitled to get possession if he wants to redevelop the building which the flats contained.
That's so the amendment?
That's as it exists.
It was the last year.
The last year of the original term.
Right.
So for the extended term, it's the last 5 years.
Okay.
So the rationale behind 990 years is that the 5 years applies for every tranche of 90 years. You're not just throwing it out at the end of, because obviously it would be pointless.
Yeah. Which is a whole other topic.
Yes. So that's uncontroversial. Scrapping the two-year ownership is also pretty uncontroversial. It stops typical games of cat and mouse between landlord and tenant when people buy and they haven't properly bought with the benefit of a claim. It's very easy to come unstuck. So that removes that.
And also the subscribe form and making a mistake in how you actually fill it out and who's responsible.
Well, there is all of that, but that... This is what was expected, that there would be the root and branch reform hasn't really appeared. So everybody was expecting the existing legislation to be literally torn up and started again. That hasn't happened. So the Act reads as basically a series of amendments, pretty much. It's pretty hard to read. I mean, even the chair of the Select Committee described it as being dry as dust.
Right.
So it's tough reading.
Okay. Glad you had to read it, not me. So then if you had a magic wand and the government said, right, okay, lawyers, valuers, you guys tell us what's the best way to do this. What would be the things that you as a lawyer think should have been done in a different way?
Well, coming back to the point that you made about notices. So the way notices are served, drawn, stopping this whole, say, the game of cat and mouse, where people got the notices slightly wrong. And then if they withdrew the claim, they couldn't make another claim for 12 months. That actually is being removed, so that's fine. But there isn't a wholesale reform of the system. So it's a bit disappointing on many fronts, I think. So only really the bare bones have gone in terms of qualifying criteria. One of the other big takeaways is the 25% commercial limit, which stops you collectively enfranchising where the commercial parts exceed 25% of gross internal floor area, is being raised to 50%. So many more buildings will become enfranchisable. But of course, there's outcry from freeholders over that. So you've got the likes of Grosvenor, you've got Capital Argent in Liverpool, King's Cross, who've done fantastic new retail developments. So at the 25% level, they can be assured of keeping their freeholds. But now they're going to lose lots of freeholds. And the problem is that these commercial premises are going to be in the hands of people who don't actually know how to manage them.
Yes, I was going to say the other complications that people don't think about is the actual day-to-day running of these things.
So all of this infrastructure, this carefully considered infrastructure, Grosvenor's big development in Liverpool, are these places going to be in the hands of amateurs? I mean, it's pretty frightening. And it's one of those sort of unintended consequences, of which there are many in the legislation. I mean, but also I think it'll increase arguments amongst people collectively enfranchising, because some will want to take over the commercial, others won't.
Yeah.
And you can require landlords, that's another change, to demand that they take lease back. At the moment, it's optional.
So I suppose, as you were saying earlier, once it's actually passed is when people can actually then start disputing it legally. And the landlords will get together on things that haven't really been thought out and practically will cause all sorts of issues and try and amend them?
Well, the human rights challenge can obviously only be mounted once you have the enactment. So that's the issue. And I had thought there'd be a lot of noise by landlords which would make the government perhaps reconsider things, but that the government seemed to be holding absolutely fast on the valuation, which includes issues surrounding marriage value and how the premium is calculated. They're holding fast, don't seem to be listening, but some people think that they will have to listen, because otherwise they are going to face huge compensation claims.
Yeah. Well, as you say, there are some good things about it. And I think that whole two-year ownership and the you can't serve notice if you fail the first time for another 12 months would definitely be well received by a lot of people. But in the state agency world, people are, you know, buyers are thinking they're going to wait and get a deal. So that's a topic on valuation that we will have to discuss with Justin. But
one of the other contentious things is the fact that tenants will no longer have to pay landlords reasonable recoverable costs. So that's their valuation costs and costs incurred in the claim. That seems to me to be terribly unfair, because in any other compulsory purchase situation, landlords don't have to pay their costs. If they're forced to sell their property, well, somebody else has to pay the costs of that process, not the landlord.
Which actually makes me think of a question. What about the fact that a tenant has to serve notice with a number that is reasonable in order to keep the notice valid, but the landlord can counter offer and be unreasonable? Is that going to be addressed?
No, that won't change.
Okay.
No, that won't change. I mean, I suppose the point about it is to stop tenants just putting in offers in bad faith.
Right.
And that will invalidate a notice.
Well, maybe the fact that the landlords are going to be paying for their own costs will make them be a lot more reasonable and keep it short and keep it cheap.
Maybe, but I think part of the problem will be that you will have landlords who therefore avoid taking proper valuation and legal advice, and there'll be much more fights in the courts.
So, well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us again. And, you know, we'd really like to keep in close contact with you so that you can keep updating us on what's happening in the legislation.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
We hope you really enjoyed that insightful discussion with Catherine. And if you've got any questions about the leasehold and freehold bill, then do please get in touch with us and we will connect you with the right professional to help you.
Thanks for tuning in to our latest episode of the London Property Podcast. Head over to our website where you can browse our exclusive network of top experts driving the market. As a member, you'll have direct access to our experts and their networks. Our award-winning content will help you choose the right professionals for your needs and make informed decisions about your investments. Personal recommendations are a powerful tool in connecting with trusted professionals. Let us introduce you to the right people to help you achieve your real estate goals. Contact us now to learn more about becoming a member and gaining access to these valuable resources, or joining our directory of experts.